Welcome to the ElectrifiedMind.com podcast, your direct access to the top life coaches, inspirational and motivational leaders of our world. Be prepared to eradicate your doubts, fears, and toxic energy as we electrify your mind for success at ElectrifiedMind.com. Welcome to the ElectrifiedMind.com podcast. I am your host, Philip Isaac. Before we get started today, I'd like to tell you about a company with stellar reviews. Carl's Landscaping, spelt with a K. That's K-H-A-R-R-L-S Landscaping, serving residential and commercial properties in Middle Tennessee and surrounding areas. Give them a call at 615-507-5313. As always, they provide free estimates. Tell them Electrified Mind sent you and save 15%. Off your first service. On today's show, we have the founder of Thrive Learning Collective. Our guest today finds joy in guiding people to tap into their utmost potential for passion and presence in their lives. I am privileged to introduce as a guest on our show today, Sandra Vesterstein. Sandra, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Philip. It's wonderful to be here.
And it's great to have you here. We've had neuro-linguistic programming conversations on the show before, but I've never had somebody that was an expert in it. So I'm excited to have you on the show today. Would you share with our listeners that don't know, what is neuro-linguistic programming?
Well, neuro-linguistic programming is really, how I think of it, is how your mind and your physiology and your language all encompasses your experience. So how we speak, the language that we use, that identifies what's happening on the inside, but that's kind of like our language is like surface structure. Our physiology tells us a lot and how our physiology is present. You know, Tony Robbins always says, you know, one of the best ways to change your emotion is to change your physiology. And sometimes I don't think people really understand what that truly means. And, you know, people that have heard of like the power pose, where you stand for, you know, I don't know, maybe a minute or two, and you put your hands on your hips and you put your shoulders back and you look up and you just feel more confident when you do that, because that's the physiology. That's how our body does confidence. So when I got trained in neuro-linguistic programming, I really felt like it gave me the key to understanding how we do what we do and what's important about it. So it's language, physiology, and it's our neurology, how it all works together. So that combination determines our experience.
Awesome. So neuro-linguistic programming is not something that you have to do under hypnosis.
No.
Let's talk about hypnosis. You practice hypnosis as well, do you not?
Yes.
Ever used hypnosis and neuro-linguistic programming together, or are they completely separate, always separate?
No, I use them together. When people want to make an appointment with me and they're like, oh, I don't believe in that hypnosis stuff, or that's the devil's work or whatever. Well, hypnosis is really just a heightened state of focus. And so if I show up just as the hypnotist in me and not the NLP practitioner, well, you're only getting a part of me. And the combination of the two is extremely powerful. So I think of it as my neuro-linguistic programming, my background in that is my left hand, and my hypnosis background is my right hand. And, you know, going through the world just using one hand isn't as convenient as having both.
I love that. Love that. So from my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, but not everyone can be hypnotized. Is that true?
Well, I think that most people can be hypnotized. I think that what happens when people have a negative experience, or they say that they can't be hypnotized, I always love it when people come into a session with me and they're saying, well, I just want you to know, I can't be hypnotized. I just know that for sure. I'm like, gosh, thank you so much for telling me that. And they're always the first ones to drop down into trance. And I really believe it's because it's all about rapport and how good the practitioner is at building rapport with the client. So if the client feels relaxed and at ease with someone, then obviously they're going to feel more at ease to go into trance. And actually, we're going in and out of trance all the time in our life. You know, when you're watching a TV show and something sad is happening and you start crying and it's not even about you, well, you've associated into that experience. That's all what hypnosis is the hypnotist is guiding you to associate into a different experience.
So you said rapport. Is that like, I would have to trust you?
Yeah, rapport is about connection.
Hmm. And how do you get someone to trust you so quickly that they've just met, they're a new client? How do you go about doing that?
Well, I think that's where the NLP comes in because, you know, with NLP, we really pay attention to how what language people are using, their predicates, like how do they describe something? Like if I said, well, what's your favorite day on the beach? And they, if they said, oh, it was just a sunny day. And, you know, I love the warmth of the sun on my skin. Well, so they're describing it in visual terms and kinesthetic terms. You know, it's a sunny day and the warmth on their skin. If they described it as hearing the ocean waves hit the shore, well, that's more of a auditory. So I pay attention to how people, you know, describe their experiences. And when I do that, I use that same terminology so they, you know, people feel connected. Like if I said, I'll never forget when I first started out, it was kind of interesting. I was working with a client that was a musician. And I was attempting to put him into hypnosis. And I had music playing. Well, for him, that didn't work because that was something that he was really, really good at. And it kept on calling his attention out to focus on the music rather than what I was saying. And so, or for another example, what even though that's something he felt comfortable in hypnosis, that's probably not my best avenue to get someone to go into trance, you know, something that they're so consciously aware of. I had another guy that he just didn't really want to feel things. And I kept on asking him, well, how do you feel about that? Because he would describe, you know, I just don't have a perspective. You know, I just don't have clarity, all visual terms. And finally he said, if you ask me how I feel one more time, I'm going to kill you. And I'm like, okay. Now, if I would have been having my NLP ears on, I would have matched his, what we call rep system of how he processes information, what's his preference. And that's visual, auditory, kinesthetic, and olfactory and gustatory. It's all of our senses. If I would have matched his preference, then he would have felt more connected with me. But I was a fledgling and I didn't really know how to do that at that point.
I'd like to quote you for our next conversation. Here I quote, I've always had an interest in helping women by tapping into the mind-body-spirit connection. In doing so, we can stop ourselves from being treated as less than. We can move away from the jealousy, abuse, and victim mindset that keeps us from being our best divine selves. And you go on to say that you personally experienced some of these unproductive feelings and that you realized you needed to heal yourself in order to be truly effective and resourceful person. Would you take us back to this time in your life when it was you that needed help? And share with us what this time in your life looked like.
Well, you know, I was always very passionate about guiding people to be their best. Unfortunately, my intention to guide people to be their best was kind of steeped into more codependency and having more low self-esteem. So if my clients didn't achieve a certain result, it was all about me. And, or if, something happened in my life, in my personal life, and someone had a negative reaction, I took everything personally. And it wasn't until a little bit later in life that I was diagnosed with generalized anxiety. And anxiety is just really about fear of the future. And so I was really good as an actress. Like if you met me back then, you would say, oh, she's so happy and she's so upbeat and all that kind of stuff. And I was. On the inside, I wasn't. I always just felt like there was a black cloud following me around. And so when I got deeper into this training, I first became, you know, a health educator and then I got trained in life coaching. And the training I had originally was really much more conscious coaching and being a taskmaster. And then as I started dabbling into NLP, I started realizing, you know, it's kind of hard not to look within to see what's playing for yourself when you're looking at programs people are running, like patterns or strategies people are running. And I really started getting present to my own anxiety. And then one day I happened to have, I have an accident. I fell and I really hit my head hard and it slammed me into a really bad depression because I had post-concussive disorder. And I really, I was just floundering. I just felt like I couldn't surface. And I started, you know, I had this practice that in the morning at the time I had some young kids. And so I'd get up really early in the morning and I would go and write my letter to God and set my intention for the day. And this particular day I said, God, I don't know what to do. I need help. I need to get out of this. And this just, because this depression was so heavy and encompassing. And I just was called to go open this book of resources. It was crazy. I just opened the book and it opened right to NLP. And I'm like, what does that mean? And so I kind of researched it. I had a little bit of NLP experience, but not in depth. And I ended up, you know, going to an NLP training, had a beautiful time. However, I never really understood what was the piece of depression in NLP. And then through that process of going to the class, what happens is that, you know, when you attend these classes, if you go all in, I mean, you peel layers off of yourself as well. So you're not only learning a subject matter, if I believe if you want to be a really good practitioner, you have to apply it to self. So I did. I applied it to self and I started, you know, it's like unraveling the ball of yarn. It's like, oh my gosh, there's that, there's this, there's whatever. And what I came down to, the core feeling that was making me feel less than was this anxiety. And anxiety and depression oftentimes present themselves, you know, together. And so the next training I went into, I thought, I'm going to, you know, follow this through. And so I got led to another training because in the NLP training I had, there was a little bit of hypnosis. And I started to find when I used hypnosis with my clients, they really progressed so much faster than the other way. And so I sought out a hypnotherapy training and I fell in love with it. I didn't ever think I'd fall in love with hypnotherapy and I fell in love with it. And through that process of learning even more NLP and the hypnotherapy, I had a process done on me in class. And it all came down to the core, what the root cause was for my anxiety. Was when I was in third grade, I was kind of being one of those kids that wasn't paying attention, daydreaming, which is actually a beautiful learning state, by the way. And I was daydreaming, and my teacher noticed it, Mrs. Wagner, and she called me up in front of the class, and she said, Sandy, come up here and show us how to do division. And I'm like, what? I didn't know how to do division. It's like she's saying, speak French. And, you know, I was the youngest, what was maybe second youngest in the class. I was tiny. And so I had that little bit of a, you know, experience of being less than just because of those two things. And then I have to go up in front of the class and do some division. I have no idea what to do. And it ended up, she looked at me and she goes, well, what are you, a stupid idiot? And that experience allowed me, not allowed me, created a belief in me that I was stupid. And so this is how belief systems get installed. You know, we have an experience and there's emotion involved and we make a judgment about the experience. So I'm up in front of a group of people. I can't do math. My teacher says I'm a stupid idiot. I must be a stupid idiot. And I formulated that belief back then. And from that point on, I carried that around, and there's a part of our brain, the reticular activating system, that just searches for all the evidence to support that belief. Even though there's tons of evidence that was on the contrary. So, you know, I ended up, you know, living a life that I was too afraid to get up in front of a group of people, because what I did is I generalized that belief. It wasn't just in Mrs. Wagner's class. It was anytime I was called upon to be in front of a group of people, two or more, that I would feel stupid. And my unconscious mind, just like yours, primary job is to protect us. So it wouldn't let me do that without, you know, it was a very costly experience every time I had to get up in front of a group. And so literally It was 15 minutes of a process. We turned Mrs. Wagner's voice into Elmer Fudd, and my anxiety went away. Now, I'm not saying I've never had anxiety again. I just do not have anxiety 24/7. I have anxiety when it's appropriate to have anxiety, but I don't run, you know, anxiety like I used to, generalized anxiety. So that, I fell in love with NLP then, and I have never looked back.
That's so awesome. Well, I know for a fact you can't possibly be stupid. I don't have stupid people on the show. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Absolutely. I'm curious about something though. You said that you had an accident and hit your head and that caused you to go into deep depression. I've never heard of anything like this. Can you tell me about this?
Yeah. Well, I was pulling a bag of dirt out of my truck and I was a little impatient. I wanted to get it out like right now. And so I had, you know, those rubber gloves that you use for gardening. Well, the bag was huge. And keep in mind, I'm not a large person. And so I'm pulling on this bag and it was a little bit misty out. So the bag was kind of slippery. And when I pulled on it really hard, I flew out of my truck, the bed of my truck. And I landed in my garage floor, smacking the back of my head. And I got knocked out. And so for women, you know, that our neck isn't as strong. So it's kind of like that whiplash effect. I hit my head. And one of the side effects you can have with a concussion is depression.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Interesting. So hypnotherapy, is that talking to the subconscious mind? Can you tell us exactly what hypnotherapy is?
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of way to do hypnotherapy. You know, there's, you know, deep trance, there's light trance, there's conversational hypnotherapy. It's really, I believe it's like bypassing the monkey mind, learning how to bypass the monkey mind so you can get into actually where the programs or patterns of your life resolve, or you know, not resolve, that that's where they live. And so, as a hypnotist, I'm more concerned of what's playing in the background versus the foreground. Because what's in the background, 95% of what we do is unconscious. So the only way we know how to do anything is we have to have some sort of representation how to do it. Like, you know, we're unconsciously competent on how to tie our shoes, because we've done it so many times, it's just automatic. Or we're unconsciously competent on how to drive our car. Like, I had an incident when I moved to Arizona and my license expired. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to retake my test. How am I going to do it? Because it was such an unconscious process. And so I really believe, you know, hypnosis is really getting to the patterns, getting to that unconscious mind where we can make adjustments, where I can lead someone to let go of a pattern that was at one time serving them and install a higher end pattern that can get them what they really want. So if, like, for me, when you quoted me about the women, you know, when a woman feels less than, you know, people aren't born feeling less than. You learn that. And so it's just a program. And so when I talk to people and I demystify, you know, failure, or that they're, you know, like a lot of people will call me about the law of attraction. Are you a law of attraction coach? And, you know, well, yeah, I guess we all are, kind of, you know, and but what they miss on the law of attraction, they think it's just thinking a good thought. However, it's not just thinking a good thought. You got to feel it too. And I think that that's the beautiful thing about hypnosis. We actually create that experience through guided, it's a guided hypnosis to create the pattern. So people have congruent thoughts, feelings, behaviors, and beliefs to be all aligned with the outcome that they want to have.
Tell us the process for you having, you know, been in this deep depression from your injury. And how do you climb out of that? How do you have good feelings when you're depressed, when you're in a depressed state? How do you go about transitioning into not being depressed anymore, if you will?
Well, you know, when I work with people, you know, most of the time people come in and they tell me what they don't want. So for instance, depression and anxiety, that's my specialty. And so when people come in for depression, they'll, you know, tell me all the reasons, you know, why they're depressed, whatever. And I'll go, well, how do you know how to do that? And usually that they think the worst thoughts possible. They're living in the past because depression is about the past and reliving something that's not good, right? And I would say most of the people that I work with have an element of anxiety too. So that's being worried about the future. So I'll go, how do you know how to do that? And they'll tell me, you know, well, you know, I think back and, you know, I just, you know, my parents never said I was going to amount to anything. And, you know, I just get this really deep pit in my stomach. And, you know, I just don't take action. I just don't even want to get out of bed. And so I'm just curious, what do you believe about yourself? I believe that I'm just not good enough. I just don't have what it takes to have a successful life. And so now I know how they do depression because I found their pattern. They think a terrible thought. They feel a pit in their stomach, which makes them behave where they don't take action, which then probably makes more of a pit in their stomach, which then is all steeped in, they're just not good enough. They don't deserve, you know, success. And then I'll say, okay, so what would you rather feel? And they look at me like, what? What do you mean, what would I rather feel? I don't know. Well, therein lies the problem. See, if you don't even know where you want to go, how can you get there? You know, so I create a map for them to get there. And part of that map is learning, okay, so what would you, you know, let's just think about a time in your life that you felt really good about something. And it could have been for 15 minutes. And we start building the pattern from there. And I can tell you, when I compare the two patterns of what they want versus what they're living, opposite. And, you know, we have various techniques in NLP where we can actually see what's running in the unconscious program by looking at their eyes and seeing what they're accessing. That it's amazing. But oftentimes people can't have a different result, or you can't think your way out of depression when you're depressed. You've got to, you know, you got to look at it and say, okay, so I'm present with this depression. And then I guess think of it in a different way, that you just have to, what would I rather feel? And once you get what you would rather feel, then we go, okay, let's think about how we can go about getting that. So the same level of mind that created the depression is not going to solve depression. It doesn't solve depression. We have to think, we got to get out of the box. We got to get out of the mindset of depression. Now, if someone's just attempting to feel better and they're feeling depressed and they just don't know how to get out of it, one of the best ways to do is look up and think of something you feel really grateful for, or go do something nice for somebody else. You cannot be depressed and doing something nice for somebody at the same time. They're two opposite feelings.
Love that. And I asked that question, it was kind of personal, and I've been there. I've been in that depressed state. And when you're there, it's all you see.
Right, right. Well, I just used this example with a young person I was working with. If you think in life, like just imagine you had a basket in front of you, and the basket was full of different glasses. And each set of glasses had, like, one was depression, one was anxiety, one was hopelessness, whatever. And then the other ones were joy and happiness and success and, oh gosh, feeling connected, all that. So once you put that, if you pull out depression and you put those glasses on, that's what you see life through. And you collect all the evidence of why you should be depressed. But depression really wants something important for you. It just has a really terrible way of getting it. And so, it's like you have to change your perspective. And that's why, like, just looking up, feeling grateful, that changes your perspective. You're actually choosing to consciously pick out another set of glasses from that basket to put on so you can see life in a different way.
I was just about to ask you about gratitude. You mentioned it. You talked about doing good things to get out of that place. Mm-hmm. You just mentioned gratitude too. Yes. I heard that from a motivational speaker that you should spend 80% of your life in gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that.
Right, right. Well, there actually is so much to be grateful for. I always think of, like, beliefs or, like, the expectations we have for life. So if I expect that I'm not going to have a very good life, or I expect people are going to let me down, I'm probably going to get that. So what would happen if we just changed our expectations of the world and, you know, kind of aligned ourselves with it? I also think that depression is really, it's a symptom of saying that you are out of rapport with your own spirit. Because when you're in connection with your own spirit, you can't be depressed. Just can't be. But it's when you're saying yes, when you really want to say no, you feel unappreciated. When you want to feel appreciated, you do things because you want accolades. When you do all that, that's not really being spirit-centered, because you're giving to receive. And that's just a whole different mindset. I know when my partner recently passed away, people would ask me, what was the biggest learning in that whole experience? Because I was pretty much his only caregiver. And I said, my biggest lesson was learning to give love to love, not to be loved. And man, it just changed my whole experience in that. I mean, I look back at that and it's probably, you know, I know that I did my best job. No regrets.
It's so beautiful. Expectations attract. I love that. I love that. Mm-hmm. Are you always looking for the lessons? You just found a lesson in a very dark period of your life. Somebody mm-hmm. that you cared about deeply leaving us. Are you always looking for the lessons?
I have this, it's interesting. You know, I think a lot of people that are in the personal development field are really devoted to guiding people to be their best. I think a lot of people, that's where their heart is. I think there's some people that forget to do their work themselves. And so when I noticed that when I was a lot younger, I thought, I want to be that person that actually walks the talk. And so I'm always like, I believe that our outer world is a projection of our inner world. So if things are not going the way I want them to, I got to check in with me. You know, I have people that come into our trainings and, you know, at first they come in, they tell, you know, I'm the best manifester. I manifest anything I want. You know, look at, I'm in this class. I just asked for the universe to provide and boom, it did. And then they'll be up in front of the class when we're doing a, you know, demonstration, and they have something that's not going so well in their life. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. So what's happening in you? So that's showing up out there. And they're like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, well, how does that work? So when it's good, you created that. You were the co-creator. And when you deem it, or you assign a meaning that it's not so good, you don't have anything to do with it. And they're like, well, and so you get people laugh at that. And so I know whatever's happening on the outside for me is because something's happening. There's a match on the inside. You know, like even the whole empath. Well, you don't understand. I'm an empath. I just absorb their feelings. Well, really? Is that what you really want to do? I mean, it's great if the feelings are awesome. But when they're not so awesome, I don't know if I want to match up with that. And the truth be told is, we always calibrate to the strongest energy in the room. So if I walk in a room and someone's super depressed and, you know, anxious, if I'm not on my game and I'm not choosing love and faith and feeling really good, I could go right down into that anxiety and depression energy field. So you have to be consciously aware of it. So one of the things that I do is I do become consciously aware of that. I check in with myself, like, wait a minute, is this the way I want to feel right now? And if it's not, I go, okay, so what would you rather feel? And I ask myself, and then I get the answer and I go, okay, so let's remember a time that you felt this way. And I remember a time and bam, all of a sudden I'm feeling a different way.
And it reminds me of when I was growing up, if I was being bad, I was my father's child. And if I was being good,
that's good. That's a good one. Yep.
So yeah. You're really taking responsibility for everything.
You know what? I will tell you this. NLP has taught me to be a responsible communicator. I grew up in the times where, you know, you could make, you know, people would say, you can't make people feel a certain way. And I think that's a bunch of you know what? I think people can make people feel a certain way. Like if I'm with somebody and I know that they're feeling insecure about maybe their weight, and I make some, say something that's derogatory about weight or whatever, yeah, that can make someone feel bad. So I really believe being responsible is not just being responsible with ourselves, it's being responsible for what leaves our mouth. Because once those words leave, you can't take them back.
It's so gorgeous, so gorgeous. So you've obviously had success in your own life transitioning, you know, out of this jealousy victim state. Would you share with us a success story that you've had with one of your clients? You touched on some a little bit earlier, but I'd like to go a little bit deeper. Obviously, there's confidentiality.
You don't need names and date of birth.
Right. But I'd love to hear a story.
Right. I just had a story recently. Because my specialty is anxiety and depression, a lot of times I get people like in their 40s that are just like, I can't do this anymore. And there are a lot of times I get younger people, which I'm always fascinated with when I get teenagers, because the teenagers that want to come to me obviously are way ahead of the game on personal development. But, you know, take for instance, I'll give you an example. This is an example of a really cool switch in conversationally. So I had a person that was a minister in a particular religious organization, and he came to our class, and their family was beautiful, wonderful family. He had a servant's heart, and he just couldn't charge people. He just couldn't do it. And he came, and I was demonstrating how to coach over the phone. So we were back to back, and we were having a conversation. And he was so passionate about his religion, his spirituality, and helping people. And he was so frustrated. So we start talking about it, and all of a sudden I said, "You know, I'm just curious. Do you tithe that church?" And he's like, "Oh, for sure, I tithe that church." And I go, huh, well, apparently God doesn't have a problem receiving money. And he's like, oh my God. And you know what? It just that little conversation changed him on a dime, reformulated that belief to one that is that he is worthy of charging. What his services that he offers, they're excellent. They're worthy of, you know, having an exchange. And he walked out of there, and I'll never forget, I got an email. He was charging $1,500 per session.
Wow.
I just thought that was so interesting. But I mean, I could tell you, there's not a week that goes by that I don't get some email, a text or something, that people will say, oh, thank you for giving me my life back. I didn't give them their life back. They did. I just got to hold the flashlight and show them where to go.
So, so cool. Would you mind introducing me to that guy? I'd like to charge $1,500 an interview.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we could do some work on that.
I always ask my guests to share something that they're passionate about with me. And you said that you're passionate about gut-brain connection. What is gut-brain connection?
So, I kind of like, I always go back to my health education days, you know, and there's not a day that I don't use that, degree. So I got intrigued with gut health when a family member was diagnosed with Parkinson's. And I had always kind of paid attention to it, but not at this level. And then when my partner was diagnosed with cancer, it ratcheted, up as far as my, what is this all about? So gut health is our microbiome. So our stomach, about 70% of our immune system is really located in our digestive system. And when he was diagnosed with cancer, cancer is a disease of the immune system. And so I started exploring that. And what they're really finding is that, like you can hear of leaky gut syndrome. Leaky gut syndrome is when there's like a mesh lining that lines all of our organs, our digestive organs. And when we have a lot of like systemic yeast or we have inflammatory disease, that would be like, you know, Parkinson's is considered an inflammatory, or the, you know, cancer, all that kind of stuff. What happens is that lining in our gut starts to thin out and fluids seep out of there and they go into our bloodstream. That's not meant to go in our bloodstream, and then it affects our brain. So like people will talk about brain fog, you know, when people eat a lot of sugar, all that kind of stuff. I'm by no means an expert in this. However, I'm passionate about, you know, if I'm working with somebody and they have depression, one of the first things I will say is, have you gone to the doctor? And have they, you know, I'm a fan of functional medicine doctors, and not to be too gross, but they're going to check your poop and they're going to see what's going on in your digestive system. And so what happens in life is when we are really under a lot of stress and our sympathetic nervous system is turned on, our body, the sympathetic nervous system is about fight or flight. It's, you know, it's not about rest and digest. And so your body goes, well, we're not going to digest this food. It's just going to sit in your gut, really. And we're going to pay attention to what's going to possibly kill you, which is probably nothing. But once that system is turned on and you don't know how to turn it off, then it affects your whole body. So what you're eating and not digesting starts kind of building up into toxic levels. And so anyways, that affects your brain. And so I believe our mind and body are one. There is no separation. So, you know, if what we're eating is affecting our brain, what we're thinking is affecting our gut. And so I always suggest people to go to a functional practitioner so they can really get to the underlying cause of the symptoms of whatever they're having. And, you know, sometimes the symptoms is emotional, depression, anxiety. You know, I work with a lot of people that have like food allergies. And the number one thing I'll ask them, so I'm just curious, what was your dinner table like at home when you were a kid? And they look at me like, what are you asking me about that? And you know what? Probably 95% of the time, it was super stressful. So they were eating food, their body's on high alert, they can't digest, their body is not taking food in as nourishment now. And so they become hypersensitive. So I don't understand the total mechanics of it. However, I've worked with a lot of people with, you know, food allergies that don't have them anymore because I teach them how to calm their nervous system down.
I love that. And I love your suggestion for people to go to a practitioner rather than, there's so many over-the-counter probiotics and products that people,
right
now, and that's kind of dangerous. You don't know what you're doing.
No, you really do have to. I mean, having someone guide you to, you know, to thrive in life. You know, it's like we're actually putting this, all these things in our body, and is it really allowing us to flourish? And you know, I mean, people know after they eat something, I mean, just test it out and go, oh boy, that didn't feel good. Or, you know, you just know, you need to start listening to your body. But when they actually, God, I remember hearing Dr. Mark Hyman is a really good resource for different functional medicine topics. But, I remember him talking about, he worked with, I don't know if it was an Asperger's child. It was, what's the name of the disease that people don't read emotions. It's not Asperger's, but you know, where it's fairly common. They think everybody has it because of the vaccines.
Don't do that to me.
I'll think of it. Anyways, there's a particular, autism. So now I just want you to know that how I said that, I'll remember it. Now, if I would have said, I'll forget that, I forgot it, I can't, you know, then I wouldn't have done it. So I just commanded my mind. That's a little self-hypnosis. Love just it. Commanded my mind that I'm going to remember it. So autism, anyways, he just changed the kid's diet and got him on a probiotic and an enzyme and whatever. And his whole symptoms changed. I mean, like everything settled down. That to me is fascinating.
So incredible. You said so many incredible things in this interview, and I can't wait to ask you this next question. If you only had 5 minutes to talk to someone and change their life, what would you say?
I just ask them, what would they rather feel? It's the simplest question, and it sounds so trite. And really, when you ask that question, most people don't know. And then I would lead into, well, let's imagine what it would be like to feel a different way. If we just ask that one question, what do I want to feel right now? And just trusted that our unconscious mind has some representation of that. And if it didn't, we could think of someone who does feel that way, and we could share in those feelings. Because everything we do in life is for a feeling. You know, how we get it, how the behavior we use to get it might not be so great. However, we do everything for a feeling. You know, we make more money not to make more money. We make more money because it gives us a certain feeling. If, you know, if you were able to charge your, you know, people you interview more money, you would feel a certain way. And what would that feeling be? You'd lock in on that feeling, run that feeling, and then it would come to you.
So cool. When you said, what would you rather feel? I was thinking, has anybody ever said not like this?
Oh yeah. Because see, we're not conditioned to do this. We're not, you know, NLP teaches, we teach people how to think. Although sometimes you have to get to the feeling first to unleash what the thoughts need to be. But when you think of all of our experiences, thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and behaviors, that's how it's all incorporated, right? So if I change my thoughts, I'm going to feel a different way. If I change my feelings, I'm going to think a different way. If I change my thoughts and my feelings, I'm going to behave in a different way. It's that simple.
Love it. I'd like to talk to you about your events. What can I expect? Your Women in Spirit retreat. What can I expect? Obviously, I can't attend, right? It's just
I've had a couple guys attend.
Listen, I'll wear a wig, but I'm not going to wear
no dress.
No dress and certainly no heels. But what can you expect to learn from one of these retreats?
Well, I approach with Women in Spirit retreats, I approach it as really getting to know how your mind works and understanding communication, and really bringing you back. I call it bringing you back home to yourself, to your spirit. And when we understand that every behavior has a positive intention, it just may have a cheap way of getting that intention. Meaning for women, oftentimes we're yes people when we really want to say no. But we're saying yes because we really want acceptance. And we're getting acceptance in a very cheap way. So I teach people to go within and say, so what is it really that you really want? What's your intention, your true intention for this behavior? And let's make sure that it's aligned, and does it honor you? So we unravel patterns of that are limiting them. We get a hold of belief systems. The belief systems are huge because beliefs are the rules we have for our life. And so if I have a belief that's limiting, not probably a good rule to have for my life. So we get a hold of that. We do a lot of energy work. Releasing, energy blockages. Most of all, I get women back in rapport with themselves. So then they can be in rapport with the world.
That's so beautiful. Sandra, you're such a gorgeous spirit. And I'm so grateful to have had you on this show today. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And be well.
Awesome. Where can we find you online?
You can go to Sandra at ThriveLearningCollective.com.
Well, that's too easy.
Gosh darn it, huh?
That's my guest, the final question. And here it is.
Oh, I thought we were done. Philip, you pulled one out of the hat.
I did. If today was your last day on Earth and you could leave here being remembered for one thing, just one thing, what would that one thing be, and what are you doing today to ensure that legacy?
Love. I just love. And what am I doing today is showing people through example of how to love yourself and guiding them to bring themselves back to love.